Right, as I mentioned yesterday, we were finishing off with the differentiation of the machlokas about notin tam nifgam versus notin tam neshevach, and whether it makes a difference whether it's a bat yoma, it's a utensil that was used that day, versus she'enu bat yoma, if it wasn't used that day. We mentioned that yesterday that there was a Tosafot here that discussed the bat yoma and enu bat yoma. Rashi comments over here about the bat yoma that it's kver hifig tamo b'layla. When it goes overnight already, that's enough. But linat laila makes it into notein tam lifgam, or makes it she'enu bat yoma. The Rabbeinu Tam on Rashi says that Rashi's right. He thinks Rashi's right, and that in their day they did not cook at night. And since they didn't cook at night, bat yoma means literally it was that day, it was used. And enu bat yoma means it wasn't used that day, meaning the next day, because overnight is not used. So he agrees with Rashi that bat yoma and enu bat yoma is determined by whether it was overnight or not. Linat laila is sufficient to create enu bat yoma. The Rabbeinu Baruch disagrees, and the Rabbeinu Baruch says you need me'eit le'eit. You need a full 24 hours to be bat yoma. Or enu bat yoma, you need a 24-hour period in between to classify it that way. In the Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Kuf Chav Bet, when he quotes the Alocha ben yoma enu bat yoma, he says, "Bekdera she'enu bat yoma, tehainu, she'sha'ata me'eit le'eit." So he paskins said you need me'eit le'eit. I mean, notin tam lifkam. So the Shulchan Aruch brings down me'eit le'eit, like the Rabbeinu Baruch here, not like Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam, who think that it's sufficient to have linat laila, even though they say v'machmir tavo lav bracha, that even with the Rabbeinu Tam shita, that machmir tavo lav bracha, even if you don't, if linat laila is enough, better to wait than me'eit le'eit. The second thing the Rabbeinu Baruch talks about or speaks about, which is important here, is that if you have a kli that is enu bat yoma, is an otein tam lifgam, the Rabbeinu Baruch qualifies and says that's only if it wasn't used whatsoever. It's only classifies as an enu bat yoma, not if it wasn't, you had the Easter that was cooked in it, and now 24 hours later you want to do something with the kli. But in between, they boiled water in the kli. Does that boiling of water in between have any bearing on the kli? It wasn't Easter, it shouldn't matter. So Rabbeinu Baruch says that you have to be careful. Shelo ayav kli afilu mayim chamim levad mitoch eight late. Within that eight late period, 24 hours means 24 hours without any usage whatsoever. The mayim chashivi kma isur lefish nasin nevela. Right. So it becomes like the isur. It's neyor the flavor, and it makes it into isur. It's as if the isur was cooked back into the pot. Because it's not 60 times of water can negate the kli to wipe out the flavor of the taste. So now, the qualification he makes, and we'll see this also, is dafko b'kli shel isur. It's only true with a kli of isur. Of a kli shel heter, that's not true. So if you have isur in the pot, and then you want to have it to be enu bat yoma, then you have to wait 24 hours without doing anything. If you're cooking it within a 24-hour period, even something that's not isur, it brings out the flavor again, and then it's chatichad nasa nevela, and it reinserts the isur back into the pot. On the other hand, if you cooked milk in the pot, and then 24 hours later you want to put basar in the pot, but in between you boiled water in there, that makes no difference, because you have tam heter. Tam heter doesn't have this issue. And so if it's tam heter, you can cook in between, and it won't matter, as long as it's not milk that you're cooking in between. As if it's isur, then it matters that you cooked in the pot in between. And that explains because galo amrin and chaticha atzman nasid nevela dafu b'isur. It's a din in isur that you have chaticha nasid nevela. But you don't have that by heter. You can't say chaticha nasid nevela by heter. And number two is that you have a not bar not, no tintam bar no tintam. The no tintam, the original object that was cooked in the pot, put flavor into the walls of the pot. The pot then imparted that flavor into the object afterwards. So that's a no tintam bar no tintam. So there, we only worry about it, but you bat yoma if it's isur. But by heter, there is no notin tam by notin tam by heter. Because then it becomes gimel notin tam. It becomes like a third level of notin tam that we're not going to worry about by the din of heter. And when the Shulchan Aruch quotes Alocha, it's very interesting. He says, Shulchan Aruch and Kuf Chav Bet, Siv Dalet, K'deira ha-blua mi basar v'chalav, im kodem shavar laila achat chamamu ba-maim, chashiv ke'ilu chazar v'nitbasho ba-isur. So that's if you have basar b'chalav, and then you cook in it. It's like you have to restart the clock on the 24 hours, which is what Rabbeinu Baruch just said. Umoni me'eit le'eit, mishash shechuch mu'amayim. You restart the 24 o'clock from the time that you heated it. Mashe'en kein b'shar yisurim. So the distinction that the Shulchan Aruch makes between basar b'chalav versus other yisurim, Whereas the Beinu Baruch makes a distinction between Heter and Isur. So Shulchan Aruch only accepts it by the case of Basar v'Chalav, but not by other Isurim. Right, the other thing I wanted to discuss a little more is the Inyan of Tefilat Kelim, which we discussed yesterday, which is that whether it's Tefilat Kelim Midoraita, is it Mina Torah, or is it Midorabanan? So Rashi, and the Pashtut Sugya that we read yesterday, was it's a Din Doraita. Learned it out from the Psukim by Midyan, and therefore it's a Din Doraita. The only thing is that the Rambam, when he quotes this as a Divrei Sofrim. So, aside from the controversy about when the Rambam uses the word Divrei Sofrim, what does that really mean? Does that really mean a Din Darabonon, or is it something that's learned out of the Shlosh Esrei Midot? But assuming that the Rambam means that it's a Din Darabonon, and you have other Rishonim that take that approach as well, is that it's only a Din Darabonon, and you actually have a Machloket in Tevilat Kelim, whether it's D'oraita, or whether it's Darabonon, and that'll have implications for Sfekot. And for instance, Breira and other issues that come up that apply by Darabonon and don't apply by D'oraita. That even according to ones who say that Tevilat Kelim is D'oraita. But that's a mitzvah asay lidbolet kelim. But the Isur of eating on a pot that wasn't Nidbal is only an Isur D'rabbanan. Because there's an asay in a Torah to put in the clay. Maybe you could say there's an Isur Asay, but it doesn't seem like that. The Isur Asay, but here, right, there is, the Isur Asay would be that you have to do, you didn't do Tevilah. But not that when you eat on it, that you violate an Isur. Right. So therefore, even according to one who says it's D'oraita, when it comes to a din of Tevilat Kelim, when it comes to you using the Keli without doing Tevilah on it, that may only be an Isur D'rabbanan. So now that makes a difference in terms of what we're bringing. Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva about Tevilat Kelim, and he has some interesting points that he makes. One is, what happens if you have a partnership with a non-Jew? If you and a non-Jew are partners in Kelim, what's the status of the Keli? First of all, if you break up the partnership now, you break up the partnership and you take your piece and he takes his piece. So you could claim that there's Breira. That there's Breira over here, since it's a Din D'rabbanan, and you have Breira, you got the Kelim that were always yours. So maybe you shouldn't have to require any Tevilah, because you jointly own them. Rav Shlomo Zalman rejects that idea, because he says, we saw in the Tosfot, that it has to do with the Shem Balut. How are the Kelim called, or who's the ownership, or what are the ownership of the name over the Kelim? So in the ownership name over the Kelim, over there was a joint ownership over the Kelim. So when you have that joint ownership, even if later on you split up that ownership and you say Breira, the fact that they were called by your joint name, that makes it that you have to do Tevilah once you get it back. Now the question about, what about the fact that when you are still partners, do you have to do Tevilah on the Kelim? When you use the Keli while you're a partner with the Goy, do you have to use now do Tevilah on it? Does it become, at that moment, does it become yours? And therefore you have to do Tevilah on it? Or not necessarily, because there is a joint ownership over here. I mean that it doesn't help. Rosh Shlomo Zalman answers something along your lines. He says, "Lachain, hold the kli zeh lo mahani tevila. Since for this kli, tevila is not going to help because of the partnership with the guy. Therefore, shapir mutar lishtamesh gam below tevila. Then you can use it without tevila." He says, "Veish harbei dugmaot lazeh." He says there are many examples of this, where you have something you have to do, but because you are unable to do it, it doesn't become that you can't have it anymore, it becomes Isur, but because your inability to do it, now it becomes that you can use it without that requirement. Right. So for instance, an Onain and a Balkari, they can eat without a bracha. An Onain and a Balkari cannot make a bracha. But we say that Kol Anen and Miolam Azeh, anybody who has been from Mosea is like, Ilu Ma'al or Gazal Me'akodesh Baruch Hu. So there's a requirement to make a bracha beforehand. So now you have an Isur Achila below bracha. But that only is generated, this is what the Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, that's only generated when you have a chiyuv to make the bracha. If you have a chiyuv to make a bracha, then there's an Isur to eat without the bracha. If you don't have a chiyuv to make the bracha, then there can't be an Isur to eat without the bracha. Same thing over here, he says. If there's a chiyuv tevila, then you can say it's an Isur to eat without the tevila. If there's no chiyuv tevila in this instance, then you can't say it's Isur to eat without the tevila, because the whole Isur is generated, or noveya, from there's the fact that it's a mitzvah to say to do the tevila. That's why there's a din d'rabbanan to, or Isur d'rabbanan to eat without tevila. And therefore he says there's no requirement of tevila. That with the shutvot, with the akum, that the akum has enough of ownership to be mafkia the fact that you can do tevila. Since you can't do tevila, you're not chayav to do tevila while you're in the partnership. After the breakup of the partnership, even with breira, we still say you have to put it into the mikveh because the breira doesn't change the fact that there was his shame or balut over the kli beforehand. So he says, "Umsubkani ba'akum shanatenis shal kli b'matana manat achzir." So it's very interesting. He says that if you get a present from a goy, amanat achzir, is that enough of a kinyan to acquire tevila? Which is interesting. So it's a masa, you probably should do tevila without a bracha, but it's a very interesting question. Now, the next thing which we discussed yesterday about the hotel. You go to a hotel, and then they have kelim that were not nitbalim. Can you eat there? Can you eat on these kelim? So there are achronim who want to claim that they're klis chora. Since they're klis chora, then you could be mekil. But he says that he doesn't agree with that, but he says that isur, as I said before, of not eating on them without tevila is only an isur derabanan. And therefore, the hotel won't allow him to go and walk off the kli and take it to the mikveh to do it. Therefore, he's mutter. That same thing that he just made, that same example, that same heter he just used before, which is that if you're unable to do the tevila, then that you should allow you to eat on them. Because the only requirement is when you have a chiyuv tefillah and you have the ability to exercise the tefillah. When you're in the malon, you're in the hotel, they're not going to let you walk out the kelim and do a tefillah. Now he does bring up the problem of davar sheyesh lo matirin. In general, when you have an isur, and it's something that davar sheyesh lo matirin, the ability to have the davar sheyesh lo matirin already makes it problematic. So he brings here that davar sheyesh lo matirin is only when you have the ability to do the matir. It's only true if you can be matir, the object. Over here, you have no ability to be matir the object. You have no ability to bring the kelim into do the tevila. So you have no ability to be matir the object. So it can't be called the gabi you. It's not a davar sheyesh lo matirin. In addition, something's only called davar sheyesh lo matirim when there's a suffix about the halacha. You have a suffix in the halacha. We don't know. It's Easter. It's not Easter. We say, wait and do it beheter. That's only true when the ikra chiyuv is there. And then there's a question of whether you do it be'isur or you wait. But over here, where there's a question about the ikur chiyuv, we're not even sure you're chayiv in tevila. There's a suffik over here. We have a suffik chiyuv tevila derabonon, which already suffik derabonon as you go to kula. But on top of that, the fact that you have a suffik in the ikur din, it's not shayach to the parsia of davar sheyesh lo matirin at all. We don't say davar sheyesh lo matirin in an issue where we're questioning the ikur halacha, whether you're chayav or not. Once you're chayav, then we can talk about davar sheyesh lo matirin. Over here, we're not even sure you're chayav in tevila, so we don't even come into the parsha of davar sheyesh lo matirin. So he says, for those two reasons, not a davar sheyesh lo matirin, and number two is, since you don't have the ability to go and bring it to the tevila, the iser can't apply to you. So because of that, he's willing to be mekil in a place where they didn't do tevila on them, then maybe you'd be allowed to eat on those kelim. The other thing he asked about, which is very interesting, is bottles that we get today for pikadon, that you give a pikadon. You buy a bottle in the store, a glass bottle, and you have to return it. You have to give back to get the pikadon. Do you own the bottle in between? Because you just paid for the bottle. You have to put a deposit down on the bottle, and then you lose the deposit if you don't bring it back. Do you have a kinyan on that bottle? So Rishon Zalman rejects that. He says, the bottle is not classified as a pikadon with you. When you give back the bottle, you get your money back. You place an eravon, some guarantee, so that you'll get the bottle back, and it's a pikadon with you. He said he doesn't think this has a classification of a pikadon. Because, first of all, if there was an onus gamur, where it was not your fault at all, and you can't bring the bottle back, nevertheless, you'll lose your money. You still have to pay. And you still have to pay, and the money stays with them, and you don't get your money back. Number two is, he says that many times, it's really balavimo, where you wouldn't be chayav at all. But Balavi Mo, when he helps you pack up the bottle to take the bottle with you, I'm not sure that's really the case. There might be some misunderstanding here because the Pikadon and the Eravon and ensuring that the bottles are brought down is a din of the Memshala, it's a din of the government, not a din in the Chanut, the Bala Chanut. Bala Chanut just collects on behalf of the government and gives it out. It's not that Balavi Mo when he does it with you necessarily. But nevertheless, he says that Kol Zman She'in Datoli Kachet the Bakbuk Latzmo Lishtemesh Bo Kli Suda. As long as he doesn't intend to keep the Bakbuk as a Kli Suda, even if it's equivalent to him buying it and then selling it back to the Chenvani, nevertheless, it's not called Kli Suda over here. And he's just using it both in a Rai, on a temporary manner, and it's like a kli made the schora that does not require a tevila. No matter what, you have to pay for that pikadon. It doesn't matter what happens to the bottle. It doesn't matter anything about it. So because of that, it doesn't look like you're making a purchase or you're putting down a down payment on the bottle. It's just a requirement. It's independent of ownership, that you don't really own the bottle in the interim. And the last thing he asks about is there lifnei iver by tvilat kelim? Is there a problem of giving a kli to someone who you know won't take it to the mikveh? So first of all, there might be a distinction between a mitzvah lo taseh and a mitzvah aseh, which is that lifnei iver only apply to lo taseh, but not to an aseh. So maybe you shouldn't apply lifnei iver at all here, because it's all talking about a mitzvah aseh and not a mitzvah lo taseh. He says that that's not necessarily true. He makes a distinction in mitzvah taseh. That might be true by mitzvah taseh, which whatever item you're giving him or transacting with him, it becomes his entirely. Over there, maybe there's no lifnei iver lo titen michshol. But in an instance where you're causing them the problem, for instance, when you're talking about eating or sleeping in a sukkah psula, where it's not their full ownership, but you're actually creating the environment or the position where they can be violating the mitzvah taseh, then we would not say there's no lifnei iver. There you would be chayav lifnei iver lo titen michshol. Says the lo gorav masei tzeshenu benet. It's no worse than if you give someone bad advice. Bad advice is also lifnei iver lo titen michshol. So over here, you hand someone something that they have to perform an assay on, then it's no worse than that. There are two kulot that he uses. One is the kulot from Shvit, which is that you're allowed to sell a choreshet, a parah choreshet b'shvit, if it's not for sure that he's going to be choresh with the parah. If you have a room to be mitlay, you have a room to say that he won't use it. Exactly, he might not use it for a klei seuda. If there's a room to be taluy, then you could say, number one, that's a heter. The second heter, he says, which might be applicable here, is that maybe there is no problem over here at all. Because while you're holding the kli, there may not be any chiyub tevila, because you don't intend to eat on the kli. The chiyub tevila is only generated when the person who bought it then wants to go and eat with it. So since there's no chiyub tevila, there may not be any lifnei iver at the time, because there's no iser. You're not handing him iser, you're not handing him something that's iser. It's only once he buys it, then he decides he wants to eat on it, then there's a chiyub that's generated. So since it's two steps removed, he says maybe there is no lifnei iver in that case. He says if you can be toleh, there's a room to be toleh that he maybe won't use it for klei suda. And number two is maybe with this idea that's a mitzvah essay, plus the fact that maybe there isn't a direct correlation, maybe we won't say that there's lifnei iver when it comes to tvilat kelim. Alright, so that's just a little summary, a little interesting on Vilat Kelim. Alright, we'll talk more about Hagalah, another thing now in today's daf when it comes to the questions of kashering. So we have on the fourth line down on the Gemara, on Ayin Vavam and Aleph, Rami Le Rav Amram Le Rav Sheshet. Rav Amram said to Rav Sheshet, Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Zvachim. Hashipudim Achskala, when it comes to these skewers or spits in the grills, Melabnan Ba'or, that's our mission over here. Yet vatznan and zvachim gabe kochim shibud v'achsala magilan b'mchamin. All you have to do is put them into hot water, boil them up in hot water. So if our mission over here says the way to kasher kelim of the grill is you have to put them into the fire. In zvachim it says the way to kasher them is to do hagalah, is to boil them up in hot water. Why is there a difference? So Amalei Amram Bari says Amram my son, ma'in kochim etzol gulei obde chamim. How could you compare kochim to Ovdei Kochavim? Hocha hetera. By kochim, we're talking about heter. So bala, that's what it was bolea heter. Hata misura bala. Over there, by Ovdei Kochavim, it's isur. So I'm a Rava. Wait a minute, Rava says, why does it make any difference whatsoever? Sof, kika polit, isura kapolit. When the flavor is extracted or comes out of the pot, at that point in time, it's already isur. By kochim, it's already notar. It's been left past the time that is qualified for the korban, and therefore it's notar, it's isur. And over here, the overcham had isur in it beforehand, but now it's so isur. So in the end, when you get the flavor out of it, it's a flavor of isur. So why should it matter that when it went in, it was heter, and when it went in, it was isur? They both come out as isur. So why should it make any difference over here? Elam arova, my hagalah. What does it mean, hagalah, in the Mishnah in Zvachim? So hagalah is nami shtifa umirika. That means shtifa, which is to wash, mirika means to rinse. There's a machloket rishonim in zvachim, what the shtifa and mirika are. Rashi over there, most of the rishonim say shtifa means mibachutz, that you wash it out on the outside. You wash it on the outside, and mirika is a rinse, which is in the inside. You have to rinse out the inside and wash out the outside. That's what shtifa and mirika are. The Rambam has a more unusual sheet that he says that they're both on the inside. And mirika means to scour. So you have to first do a marika on the inside, a scouring, clean up, make sure everything's washed out, scrubbed out. And then you have to do a shtifa, you have to do an additional rinse afterwards to wash it out. But yeah, without any scouring material. So that's the shtifa marika. Now, shtifa marika is a gzerata katuv by kochim, which says, by kochim, umaraku shataf b'mayim. That you have to take the keli, you have to be marek and shotef it. So the marika and shtifa is a requirement by kochim that's independent of kashrut, independent of any problems of isur. That's just a requirement of the Gzeirat HaKetuv. Like we have other Gzeirat HaKetuv, which is brought, we're actually be brought in those Mishnayot and Zvachim in the same location, which is rants of blood splashes on one of the big day kuna. You have a requirement to be koveis. You have to launder it in the Kodesh. To launder it in the Kodesh. That's a Gzeirat HaKetuv that has to be laundered in Kodesh. You don't just launder it. You have to launder it in the Kodesh. So to here, there's a requirement of Mikan Shtifa in clay Kodesh, independent of whether they're kasher, whether there's issu, whether there's notar. Rava says over here, you have two requirements. You have a requirement of libel into kashrit, and you have a requirement of Mikan Shtifa that's in Kodeshim. So he says, our Mishnah is talking about kashrut. So that's why he says libel. The Mishnah's Vachim is talking about Hagalab B'chamim. He says, that means to do Mikan Shtifa. So Bai asks on him, what do you mean? How could it be? Rabbi, me domi. How can you compare the two of them? Mariko shtifa betzone in agala bechamin. There's a distinct difference between them, which is that Mariko and shtifa only require cold water. They don't require hot water whatsoever. Whether it's the rinsing of the inside and washing of the outside, or whether it's scrubbing the inside and rinsing the inside like the Rambam, they don't require hot water, just tzonein. And the Mishnah in Zvachim says, Bahagalah, and Hagalah itself requires chamin. So how could you say that the Mishnah meant Hagalah bechamin, it really meant Mariko and shtifa? They're different classifications, totally different classifications, totally different processes. So Elam Abaye, Abaye says, no, this is the reason, this is how you reconcile with him. Yugida Lav Reyo, his friend will tell about him. That means that they are, each one is Mare on the other. So that means, Ta'ana Halcha Libun, V'adin Hagala. Here it says Libun, and you will also require Hagala. Tana Atam Bai Kochim Hagala, V'adin Libun. That you need both. You need both Hagalah and Libun in order to kasher the Keli, and each Mishnah gave you one of them. So Rava says, well, that doesn't make any sense. When you say Yagida Lav Reyo, you say, I have information in one place, and then the other place it gave me a part of the information, and I can deduce the rest of the information from, or infer the rest of the information from the first location. So the first location it told me Libun and Hagalah, and in the second location only told me Hagalah, I can infer, I could deduce that the Hagalah there also requires Libun. So he says, your Yagida Lav Reyo doesn't make so much sense. Here it says one thing, and there it says the other thing. How can you say that they're both talking about the same situation, the same item? So one of them Mishnah should have Hagalah and Libun, and the other Mishnah should just have one of them. Kodshim hainu tamayu, kider of Nachman amar baravua, damar ko yom vayom nase giul lechabeiro. So this is the answer by Kodshim, is that Kodshim, the pots are in continuous use. Since they are in continuous use, they are always palate the isur, and then machnis nu heter. So there's never a time period where the notar remains in it till past the point where it becomes really notar. Before the notar has a chance to become notar, you've already cooked in it again, taking that flavor out, and then machnis had their flavor into it. So it keeps, since it's in constant use, since it's in constant going, that it doesn't have enough time to remain. The flavor of Easter never remains in there long enough to become notar.
Shabbos.
Good question. So the Gemara has another question, but then Shabbos happens to be, it's a very good question. Think of that. All right. So each day becomes a Gula Chaveros. So the Gemara says, Tinach Shlamim. That works well for Shlamim. The Kevin to the Shnei Yamim Mitachle. What's the time period of which Shlamim can eat? It's Shnei Yamim Velaila Echad. You have 2 days. So Mekame Davi Notar. So before it comes Notar, Kavi Gil. You have already a Gil. You're already cooking it again. Alachatot, winning a time at a chatot. Kevin to Yom Velaila Mitachla. The requirement of Kodshe Kodashim is that you only eat it for Yom Velaila. Kimavashu Ba'id Na Chatat. When he cooks a chatat in it today, have a notar. By tomorrow, it becomes notar. Ki hadam avashu ba l'machar, when you cook the next day, o shlamim, o chatat, when you cook a shlamim or chatat on the next day, kapalid notar da chata daidna, it spits out the chatat of today that you're bringing today, because then it's a notar already, b'chatat u'shlamim to l'machar, and the chatat u'shlamim that you are bringing on the next day. So that's not going to help you. You haven't stopped it before it became notar. The whole idea of this gil in the kodeshim is that you always catch it before it's notar. So if you do this, by shlamim, I can understand that because you have a second day. So the second day you cook something in there, you can take out before it comes notar. But by chatat, it already expired, and expired before you're actually going to cook something else in it. So that's not going to help you. All the cases are where you have a chatat, then a shlamim. That in the same pot, on that day, they cook, anytime they cook a chatat in it, they also cook a shlamim in it afterwards. Right after they cook chatat in it, they cook a shlamim in it. The next phrase in the Gemara is very problematic. There are those that wanted to take it out. It's not clear. I haven't found anybody who says it strongly enough that they want to take it out. The Rashash points out that there's a big problem with it. I think it's the Mashash or the Mashal points out that there's a problem with this. So the next, it says here, Dachatat al-Machar, Ushlamim de'emol, v'hadei adadi kashalim zimnayu. That the shlamim and the chatat end their period at the same time. If you have a shlamim that lasts for 2 days, and you have a chatat and it lasts for 1 day, then the shlamim on its second day will end, also has only 1 day of period. So you're not, what it seems to be, you're not mevi'et day notar, which is one of the problems here. One of the problems here is if I cook shlamim in a pot that had a chatat in it, the chatat's going to expire now, the shlamim has 2 days left. So if I absorb flavor from the chatat, I've now shortened the life of the shlamim. Because now it has flavor of chatat in it, and I've shortened the life. Right, so you have to finish it then, all the day, and with maybe kochim the day psul, which you're not allowed to do. Now it seems to be, and I'm just going to tell you this now, that the Gemara ignores that issue whatsoever. It seems from this Gemara they totally ignore it. And the Rashba himself raises the issue, and he really leaves it b'tzarachiyon. He raises it in two contexts, and he really doesn't have an answer about how this solves the problem. He talks about that there's an Isser kalush when it's taken out, because it only comes Isser when it's tam, but it's, nevertheless, it's still a problem, and in other Gemaras we do see that problem. Here it seems to be a somewhat of an attempt to deal with it, but it's so difficult that I'm not sure it's really dealing with it. And that is, it says here, if you have a shlamim on its second day, shlamim on its second day and a chatat on its first day, then it's not maybe day psul because they both end that day. But that's not true. Because a shlamim
finishes
at the shkia. Right. It's shnei yamim, echad, the laila in between. A chatat is liyom v'layla. So it's not, they do not have the same ending period. And that's what makes this so difficult, this next statement in the Gemara. Alright, so he says, the chatat l'machar, ushlamim de'etmo, which means the chatat and the shlamim, b'hadei adadei kashalim zimnayu. The period ends at the same time. So then he cooks in the shlamim the machar, which will be the next shlamim that you put in it, and each time you extend the period of time. It's not clear to me how this works or why it works. When you cook the chatat in there, right, the previous shlamim would end at the same time, then you cook new shlamim in it and it works. The whole way that this works in the Gemara is unclear to me. It's very difficult because it's boleya from other korbanot. And it seems to me the Gemara has no problem that it's boleya other korbanot and doesn't have any effect on it. Even though in Zvachim we clearly see that it's a problem of maybe kochim the day psul. Nonetheless, the Gemara seems to be ignoring that issue totally and says as long as you take out the flavor before it comes notar, that's fine. Because it was a zman of heter, the heter comes out. Don't worry about it anymore. So if you cook the shlamim in a pot that's a chatat, then the shlamim wipes out the chatat from becoming notar, and everything becomes like a shlamim. The shlamim is not affected whatsoever by the chatat. It seems strange. The problem of the absorbance of another korban here is somewhat questionable why it's the Gemara ignores it. But the Gemara asks another question, which basically then knocks it off, which is, Yachi, hagala nami lo dibai. You shouldn't need hagala whatsoever. The way you have now structured it, then the kelim of kochim should not ever require hagalah. Because you say that as long as I'm cooking kochim in there, then I've taken or wiped out the flavor from the previous kochim that were in there. So if I cook a shlamim after a chatat, that whatever from the chatat was absorbed in the wall is now out, and we don't have to worry about the keli at all. The keli is a keli shel heter, and I shouldn't need hagalah whatsoever. The shlamim tomorrow, I'll cook another shlamim in there, I'll be fine. As long as I always cook before it reaches notar, then it seems to be there won't be a problem whatsoever. You won't need hagalah ever. So why does the mission require hagalah over there if you don't, if the whole reason that we're distinguishing between our mission that says libun and the mission of Zvachim that says hagalah is because the kochim always have continuous use, and the klei over the chomer, no, stam ezeinu b'nei yoman. So there the Isser is there, and it hasn't come out. Now here, the Isser never came about, because you kept cooking in it. But if you keep cooking in it, why does the mission require Hagalah whatsoever? God requires Hagalah because there must be Isser in there. But you're claiming there's never Isser in there. So why do you need Hagalah? Ah, what are you going to say? Oh, he left it for more than 24 hours. He left it for more than 24 hours. It becomes like a Klei Oved Chachamim, which requires Libun and not Hagalah. Because then it's no longer like the Klei Kochim anymore. So that's the Gemara's question, which rejects this answer. The rejection of the answer is that you wouldn't need the Hagalah if you're really right about this. And again, it does not address the fact, I think the question here just lets it go, but doesn't address the fact of the boleyami, the other kochim, which is not addressed by the Gemara here whatsoever. So the Gemara leaves it as a kasha. So now Rav Papa gives another solution to the problem. Hi, karid. Hi, lo karid. So the difference between them is whether it becomes encrusted in there? Does the flavor and whatever the usage is of the Isur, does it stay in there so well and so deeply that it requires Libun to move it? The idea that a clay, Obed Chalim, is not used on a constant basis, since it's not used on a constant basis, it gives time for the Isur to become encrusted in there. Therefore, you'll need Libun to take it out. On the other hand, the Kodshim, Kelim and Kodshim, which are in continuous use, they don't have enough time for them to ever harden in the flavor, and therefore it'll be sufficient with Hagalah to take out the flavor. That's the answer of Rav Papa. Ravashi Amar Lo'olam Kidamran Mi'ikara. It's like we said above. Hacha Etera Bala, Hacha Yisura Bala. The difference between them is what's in them. Is there Heter in there or is it Yisur Bala? But Kakashalach, we said before, Rav had that problem. Well, why is that the solution that when Rav Sheshi said to Rav Amram that that's the solution, it has to do with Heter and Isur, we rejected it, Rav, because they're so Bali De Isur. It says, Kakashalach, Bina the Kapolit, Isura Kapolit. It says, Bina the Kapolit, Lo Itali Isura Beine. Isur is no longer extant, it's not around anymore. It says, there's a big difference. By the Obik Chachamim, you have a real piece of Isur that was absorbed into the walls of the pot. It was already Isur before it entered the walls of the pot. So what's in the walls of the pot is flavor of Isur. On the other hand, when it comes to the Kodshim, what's absorbed into the walls of the pot, at the time that they're absorbed into the walls of the pot, is complete Heter. It's only later on it becomes Notar. Only later on, after you wait past the time period of expiration of the Karban, then it becomes Notar. When it's Notar, it became Notar in Tam. It didn't become Notar in Isur Be'en. So that's the difference, he says. When you have Isur Be'en, then you can say if it's absorbed into the walls, it's problematic, and you need to get it out, you need to use Libun to get it out. On the other hand, when you're talking about Tam that is not Be'en, then when it comes to Isur, all you need is Hagalah to get it out. You don't require a full Libun to get it out. Tosfot points out over here that if you cook something in a kli, She'enu Ben Yoma, you cook or you bring something in Eichel Mo, the din of the kli is asur. A kli she'enu ben yomo, you're not allowed to use. We saw that above in the Gemara because of Mishum ben yomo. On the other hand, b'di'evit, if you did cook something in the kli, the food is of heter. So Tosfos wants, what's the difference? Why is the kli asur and the food is mutar? So he says, I'll tell you the difference is exactly what we just said here. The difference that it makes over here has to do whether it was balea heter or balea isur. When it comes to the kli absorbed pure isur into it. Later on, after 24 hours, it becomes Einu Ben Yomo and it's no Tentam Lifkam. But what the Kli took in, and what was Boleya, was Isser. On the other hand, the food that you cook in a Kli, She'enu Ben Yomo, is never Isser. There was never Isser put into the food. By the time the food is absorbing the flavor, it's already She'enu Ben Yomo, it's no Tentam Lifkam. So that distinction, he makes it, he says, that distinction is similar to what Rav Ashi just suggested over here, and Tosfos is going to make this distinction in a number of places, that the difference between absorption of Isser versus absorption of Heter. If you absorb Isser, then even when it comes to Ben Yomo, we worry about it, we say Gzeira Otto Ben Yomo. The other hand, food that only came into contact with the Kli after She'enu Ben Yomo, there it's Mutar B'di'evet, because it never came into contact with the Isur. It only came into contact with the Heter. So then he says, Hagala. We've been discussing Hagala over here. How do you do Hagala? And the Gemara is going to discuss this in a second again. How do you do Hagala? What do you have to have in there? In the Hagalah of the Kli, do you need 60 times the water as the Balea that's in the Kli? You take a Kli, small Kli that is Balea flavor. When you put it into the bigger pot and you're going to boil it in there, do you need 60 times as much water as flavor that's in the walls of the pot? Or it doesn't matter. The Hagalah just gets the flavor out and it's irrelevant. So Tosa says over here that you do need it. When you're Magila Kli, you require that it have 60 times as much water. But again, he draws the same distinction. He says, depends what's in the walls of the Kli. If you have Isser in the walls of the Kli, then I require 60 times the flavor that's in the walls of the Kli in order to remove the Isser. Other than if you have Heter in the walls of the Kli, and you want to kasher the Kli to use it with something else, then you don't require 60 times. So he says, for instance, Chametz. Chametz before Pesach, if you do it before the Zman Isser, and you want to kasher the clay Chametz, you don't need 60 times as much water. You only need 60 times as much water when it was Isser. Here the Chametz is not Isser now, it's Heter, and you're trying to remove the Heter from the Kli. So when you're trying to remove Heter B'Shat Heter, then you can be Magil even with less than a Samach. Galat Kli Ben Yomo, En Lagil Ala B'Samach. And a Kli Ben Yomo, you have to use 60 times for this. It says, Avashu Magilin, Kli Chametz Ber Pesach. Dal Shaot to Shat Heter he Cholagilo. I feel a clay bin yomo pochad misamach. That we note in tam, but note in tam shall heter, which we mentioned before, is okay. So Chametz Kara, Mimeno Lamayim, Mimeno Mayim, Chuzir Nivla B'Kara. So there's no problem with that. So that's what actually the Shulchan Aruch brings down, the Halacha, about this distinction when it comes to Heter or Isur that was Nivla B'Tocha Kli, that makes actually a difference in when you come to do the Hagalah. Alright, so the Gemara here now continues about Hagalah and Libun. Avadad Kamam Labnan, how do you do Libun? Avramani Achit Tashir Klipatan, until the outer skin, the outer edge comes off. The case of Magilan, how do you do Hagalah? Amravuna Yurek Tana, Toch Yurek Dola. Put a small pot into a large pot, large cauldron. Yurag Dola Amai, what's the classification of Yurag Dola? And then what do you do with it? How do you kasher a Yurag Dola? So Tashma, Dao Duda. So that's what a Yurag Dola is, a Duda, which is either some form of a boiler or a cauldron. Dave Be Rav. Now what the question is, it can be three people here. It can either be Be Rav Akvia, Be Mar Ukva, or Be Rav Ukva. One of those three, you can see on the side, the Aruch and the Masorah Shas bring down that they're all different gear sold here. Ahadarlay, so what did he do in order to cash the pot? Ahadarlay, Gedan for Delisha, Apuma. He built around it a dough border on the top of the Kli, Umalyu Amaya, and then they filled it with water, Vartacha, and then they boiled it up. So how do you cash a big, large pot or cauldron? You fill it with water all the way to the top, but then you have to ensure that the water exceeds or goes over the top of the pot. So how do you do that? How do you ensure that the water will boil over and ensure that it touches all the rim of the pot to kasher it? You build up a border, you build up something above the level of the top of the pot that will allow the water to boil higher than the top or the rim of the pot. So that's what he did here. Who is a Talmud Chokim that knows to do this? Ilav Rav Akvia. Again, it would depend on what the Girsa was in the Pravi or Kavya. The Gavra Ravo. He was a great man. The Kasavra Kibolo Kachboto. The way it absorbs, that's the way you get it out. Mabolo Benitzotzot. Just like when it was Boleya, even though you were cooking inside the pot, still water splashed and touch the rim of the pot, or sometimes overflow the top of the rim of the pot. So therefore, you need to kasher that area. How do you kasher that area? That's it. Ma'bolo benitzotzot, apoto benitzotzot. He did it by allowing the water to boil up to the rim of the pot, or over the rim, by making this extra border over the top of the pot, in order to kasher the pot. So where it's too big to kasher it inside another pot, you kasher it using itself, to do the agalah within itself, but you have to ensure that the agalah reaches the top of the rim and above the pot, in order to kasher it that way. Okay, now the last thing in our Mishnah, which is the last thing the Gemara is going to discuss here, Sakin Shafa Vihi Torah. Sakin, if you just scrape it down and you rub it down, then it's fine. Where it says, Amar Ukva Bachama, Menoatza Asara Piamim Bakarka, really should be, TikTok was Eser Piamim Bakarka, you dang it into the ground 10 times. Amar Abuna Breder of Yeshua, Ubekarka Sheina Vuda. That's the land that was not worked yet, not softened but hard karka. Now, Rukama was sucking yafeh she'en ba'gumot. It has to be a good knife that's smooth, that has no holes or cracks or crevices in it, in order to kasher it. So, Tanya Namiyoch, you have a braita that says, such sucking yafeh she'en ba'gumot, natzah asara p'amim, resa p'amim ba'karka. You put it into the ground 10 times. Amar Avuna Breda Rav Yeshua lechol ba'atzonein. This only works to help you if you want to use the knife for cold items. So you have a knife that you want to use for cold items. How do you kasher the knife? You have to take away everything that's on the knife. Now the knife has a problem because not only does it have, you know, cold that has to be mediach, that you have to rinse it off, but it also has shamnunit, what we call the fats that are still stuck on the knife. Those fats that are stuck on the knife, you get out being no weights in the karka. You go by planting it in the ground 10 times. Tosfos brings that Yushami says that it's 3 times. And that you only need 3, you don't need 10 times. But he says, it seems like from the Gemara we'll see later on that the Halacha Lamaaseh said that we do say 10 times, and therefore you should do it 10 times. And also, he said, you make sure that you have to do it in 10 times in karka that's really hard. It has to be really hard karka. So it says it's a hard karka, you can't dip the knife into the same location in the ground. You have to move it into different locations to do it 10 times. You can't do it over and over in the same location, because otherwise then it doesn't have the abrasive effect of being put into the ground. So now the knife itself, that you can use it bitzonein, again, it's only when it doesn't have gumot in it. If it has gumot, if it has some sort of crevices in it, then we're worried about the shamnunit that gets stuck in there, and that you can't get out by simply dipping in the ground. How do you get that out? So that's a good question. Do you require a full hagalah? Do you require to have to actually do Hagalah to get it out, or Libun, maybe even Libun? Hagalah may not work here at all. You might require full Libun to get it out of the crack, because otherwise the Shamnunit may not come out even with Hagalah. You might need Libun, or Hashchiza, which is a discussion in the Mishonim, where the sharpening of the knife, does that help in order to get rid of it? Because if you sharpen the knife, you're smoothing it out, is that enough to remove the Shamnunit and the crevices that are there? So maybe you could, instead of doing Libun, which is Tosfos suggests over here, the possibility that instead of doing the requirement of Libun on a knife, could be replaced with sharpening and Hagalah. That instead of doing Libun, if you do Mashchiz and Hagalah, they may be the equivalent of Libun when it comes to a knife. Now, the interesting question is, what knives require Libun over here? So it turns out to be a Machloket Rabbeinu Tam and the Riva, and that comes to the question that was asked here yesterday, the question that you asked, about what about things that are used in the fire, for instance, stokes, and things that are put in the fire, why aren't they classified as Tavir Ba'esh? So I gave you the answer yesterday, and it turns out the Rabbeinu Tam makes such a distinction today. Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Dai Kamlan Sakin Ba'yi Libun, that a knife requires Libun, Acha, Yisura Bala, Hainu Dakwa Be'isur the Sakin Gdola. That's only with that big knife, the derech litzvot ba basar, because then you will use it to roast meat on it, you'll put it into the fire. A big knife is used in the fire. So a big knife that's used in the fire requires libun. On the other hand, the Riva says, matzrich libun gam b'sakinim ketanim. It says, even small knives require libun. It's exactly your question. Sometimes you take the knife and you flip a burger on the grill. So it's not used in the fire, but it comes in contact with the fire when you flip it in the grill. So there, the Riva says, you got to do Libun on that knife as well. Here comes the distinction of the Rabbeinu Tam, and that's what we said yesterday. Rabbeinu Tam Omer, it's on the last narrow line in that Tosfos there. Rabbeinu Tam Omer, Dezeinu Kari Tashmisho Yedei Aor. That's not called using in the fire. Kemi Tashmish Kavua Yedei Aor Sagi Ba'agala. Something that has to sit in the fire. It's something that really is used in the fire all the time. To simply put it in the fire to flip it, that's not considered use in the fire. That's again, yesterday when we talked about the items that were placed into the fireplace, it's not even that they're used to put it in the fire. They're really used to keep your hand away from the fire. They just put in the fire temporarily. You just stoke a little bit and they take it out. So that's not called, you know, Tashmisho Yedei Aish. Tashmisho Yedei Aish means that you sit in the fire, that it bakes in the fire. That's called Tashmisho Yedei Aor. So both for the requirement of Libun, as well as yesterday we were talking about the qualification to be considered Klei Seuda, that has to be really sitting in the fire in order to be classified in that way. Right now, the Gemara continues with this story. Kiha demar Yehuda ubati bar tuvi. It's a case, a situation in which Yehuda and Bati bar tuvi have yatve kami shavur malko. They were sitting in front of shavur malko. Generally, most people believe that shavur malko was a Persian king, right? That was non-Jewish. And there are shita. Rashi brings in other places a shita that was Shmuel. Obviously, over here it would not make so much sense that it's Shmuel. So shavur malko, the more palatable explanation is that he was a non-Jewish Persian king. I had to look Mayu etroga. They brought before them an etrog to eat. Pasak achal. So he cut some and gave it to the king, Shavur Malka, and he ate it. Bahavle le Bati bar tuve. And also he gave pasak and he gave cut off a piece and gave it to Bati bar tuve. Hadar datsa asara zimnei ba'ara. Afterwards, then he took the knife and implanted it in the ground 10 times. Then pasak avle the Mar Yehuda. And then he cut with the same knife to give the etrog to Rabbi Yehuda. So what did he know? He knew it was a non-kosher knife. They're cutting bitzone in here. They're cutting about an etrog. Well, it's interesting because an etrog, whether it has a qualification or a classification, as a davar charif. Sometimes there are some poskim that believe that citrus fruits have a din of davar chamutz or davar charif. So over there it wouldn't help. It's interesting over here that the Gemara sees it fine to use the knife for etrog, even though he's just, no way, it's eser pamim. So whatever, he cut the etrog for Shavur Malka, he cut it for Bati bin Tuvi, and then he cut it for Rabbi Yehuda. But before he cut it for Rabbi Yehuda, he wanted to cash the knife, at least for Tzone. How did he cash the knife for Tzone? He planted it into the ground 10 times. That's the raya for Tosfos, that it's really, they mean 10 times literally, and not that it's lav dafka 10 times. See that he did it 10 times in the ground for Rabbi Yehuda. So now, Amrlai Bati bar Tuvi. So Bati bar Tuvi turns to the servant there, to the one who's serving them, and says, wait a minute, I'm not Jewish, he's Jewish? I'm not a Jew? How come you only did that for Rabbi Yehuda, you didn't do it for me? How come you fed me with the same knife that you fed Shavur Malka, and for Rabbi Yehuda, you kashered the knife for him? So Amalei, Markim Leibigave, Marlokim Leibigave, says, I know Rabbi Yehuda, that he's Makbid, he's a from Jew, and he's Makbid on this, so I took care of him. You, I didn't know you were so from, I didn't know that you were Makbid on these things. You know, we get different types of Jews in here, some of them are Makbid, some are not. So I knew about Rabbi Yehuda, that he was Makbid, you, I didn't know that you were Makbid on this type of thing. And the other one is Igadamre, Amalei, Idkar Mai, Avad Burta. He says, I know what you did last night. So Rashi explains here that there was a Persian custom that when guests came to stay by you, they used to provide women for you overnight. So they sent women to Rabbi Yehuda, they sent women to Bati Bar Tuvi. Rabbi Yehuda turned down and sent them back, but Bati Bar Tuvi did not turn them down. So he says, you know, I know what you did last night, so I don't think you're so makbid on mitzvot. The fact that you took the Persian woman last night right, indicates to me that you're not so frum. That's the way Rashi reads it. Tosafot says that it wasn't so bad, because Bati Bar Tuvi was actually an Eved. Bati Bar Tuvi was an Eved, and since he's an Eved, he's actually mutar be avodat kochavim. The lo chatabah said, it wasn't such a chesh, a dina ya Eved ktsat. That he was still an Eved ktsat because he was mechusar get shechrur. That he had been freed by his master, but he still didn't have a get shechrur, so he wasn't a full-fledged Jew. He was still an Eved or a partial Eved, and therefore it wasn't such a big isur. But nevertheless, the Persian saw in his action something that indicated that he wasn't so makbid or he wasn't so careful, and therefore when it came to cutting of the fruit in front of him, he kashed the knife for Rabbi Yehuda, he did not kashed the knife for Bati Bar Tuvi. Okay, with that we'll end the second of Avodah Zarah.